Welcome to Manager Tools, our guidance on how to scan a resume, part 6, and the last part. Here we go. This guidance answers the questions, how do I scan a resume? What do I look for in a resume? How do I decide whom to phone interview? Finally, after years of waiting, The Effective Manager in book form is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and your other retail booksellers, as well as signed copies are available on our website, manager-tools.com. If you want to know the basics of how to manage others effectively in book format, including Kindle and ebook format as well, we encourage you to buy, read, and then implement the guidance in The Effective Manager.
So, Mark, for weeks and weeks, Mike and I have been butchering your guidance, just making up as we were going along. And you've been writing hard and presenting, so you haven't been here. And now you get to take over your guidance in the last part of this series about reviewing resumes.
It's amazing to me that it took this long to get it out. And I feel bad for our community that it took us this long. There are so many good topics, but this one is a no-brainer. And the fact that it runs to 60 pages in Byword in terms of show notes for our licensees should give some indication of how much detail is involved. Hopefully, if you've been listening, you know that, wow, the way you had been doing up until now was probably a pretty light scan. And if you ended up with hundreds of resumes in the yes pile, we will take care of that for you in this guidance. And I'm excited that I get to do the last one. And it doesn't hurt that Mike's on vacation.
That's a good thing. And so the last two things we're going to look at are accuracy and density.
Yes. So accuracy is amazing to me that there's even a discussion about this. We're going to make the case for accuracy here. Wendy and I, as I'm sure she's said already in the cast, have seen thousands and tens of thousands, probably 50,000 resumes in my case. Over half of the resumes I see here at my desk have errors in them. Wendy, true for you as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a fourth of them, maybe, have multiple errors?
Yeah.
Now look, accuracy matters on a resume, folks. Candidates know that accuracy matters. So any mistakes are a reason to be concerned. Candidates know that somebody looking at their resume is a step in the process, and it's a go or no-go gate that their candidacy has to get through, okay? And they know that accuracy is necessary, and that accuracy, easily summed up, is a right, wrong, black, white, go, no-go kind of thing. Either it's accurate or it isn't. Now, if it isn't accurate, there are various levels of isn't accurate, but either something is accurate or it is not when it comes to a factual representation of the past. If we're looking for reasons to say no, and let's be clear, we are, we don't need to look any further than someone who won't work hard enough to get the details right, when getting the details right is the widely understood single most important factor in a process. Everybody knows your resume is supposed to be accurate. Go to even the worst guidance websites in the world about resumes. And believe me, folks, there are bad ones. Go there and they'll say, well, it has to be accurate. So imagine that everyone knows that. Let's assume it's a reasonable assumption that everyone should know that. If that's the case and it's not accurate, there are errors. Essentially, what they're saying to you is, I will never be a detail conscious person. And more importantly, I will not be a detail conscious person in the situations where detail consciousness is widely agreed to as the most important thing. And it gets worse than that. I mean, a resume is a written document. It's a form of written communication. In written communication, accuracy is considered to be important. So a resume with errors indicates a poor communicator.
Always.
Yeah. If you've ever hired somebody knowing that they were a poor communicator, you know you regretted it, right? We say this all the time. The only thing worse than an open position is filling it with the wrong person. And we hear this all the time. You know, that guy's a pretty good developer, but he won't talk to people. He won't be a team player. And communication is just what we do all the time, but it kills us over and over and over again. Find me a website of a large, highly successful organization, well-known public corporation that doesn't include teamwork and collaboration, both of which fundamentally rely on solid communication skills, that don't have those values on their corporate website. You can try to overlook poor communication. And to be clear, guys, we're suggesting that an inaccurate resume is a sign of a poor communicator. Okay? If you try to hire somebody who's a poor communicator, it just ends poorly. And again, communication is the single most frequent thing we do at work. If you're going to hire somebody with inaccuracies on the resume, you're hiring a poor communicator, and you're willfully planning to work with someone who is going to send you a lot of emails that are riddled with errors. And they're going to do the same thing with their directs if you're hiring a manager, and they're going to do the same thing with your customers. Everybody jokes about, oh yeah, you can text, you know, texting. We don't have to be spelling perfect, and you know, I my thumbs aren't perfect, and so on. I don't know that many managers who are highly successful who say it's okay to send inaccurate texts or misspelled words or use jargon that's perhaps narrowly defined within our industry and that a customer wouldn't understand, or to be super casual. No, they just don't.
If you can't communicate with one person, you can't communicate with anyone. It's not one of those skills where you can use it in a narrow place and then not be able to use it in another place.
Yeah.
Because like you say, we communicate all the time.
I mean, look, here's what you're saying. If I'm willing to accept a resume with errors, because, by the way, I mean, we know, we've already established, hopefully you agree with this, that accuracy on a resume is widely agreed to as being a core fundamental attribute of a good resume, you're willing to look at PowerPoint slides with errors. You're willing to look at reports that go up to your boss with errors. That's what you're saying. And look, spelling errors, which in the old days used to be important because it told you, A, whether or not somebody knew how to spell, and B, whether or not they checked things. It's different now, of course, because you don't have to know how to spell things. The systems upon which we enter our data know how to spell things. But spelling errors today are more egregious than they used to be, because a word processing, to spell a common word incorrectly almost requires you to work around it. It'll tell you it's wrong.
It does. You know, when you want to spell a word and you know you want to spell it that way for whatever reason, and the system insists on correcting it, like it corrects my name all the time. It's like, no, that's how I wanted to spell it. So it's hard.
But the other thing is somebody sends you a document with misspellings. They don't know how to spell. Okay, fine. They don't know how to spell it. Well, spelling's not important. The system, a young person told me, the system always corrects it. I'm like, well, no, it doesn't, because I get stuff from you and there are misspellings. Well, that's just, I'm being fast. To spell, it's a sign of hard work, intellect, and attention to detail that people know the difference between words like there and there, and when to use an apostrophe on the words it's. Okay. Everybody always do it's apostrophe. Its attributes are, and you're using an apostrophe because that implies ownership, when in fact you don't spell it's that way. And if somebody says, well, it doesn't matter, I would argue it does. It absolutely does. And I don't think in 25 years, CEOs are going to be doing misspellings of words and people are going to say, it doesn't matter.
It's like when you're at the movies and there's something that's incongruous and it kind of throws you out of the movie and you suddenly realize, oh, I'm in a theater and I'm watching a movie rather than, you know, being engrossed in it. When you're reading something and you're engrossed in it,
you're thinking about the ideas rather than the delivery. Yes.
And then you suddenly see a mistake. You have to read it again and you're thrown out of that idea and you have to kind of reset yourself. And so the spelling mistake is important because it ruins the flow of what it is you're trying to communicate.
Exactly. And look, the other thing people say is they have this argument about speed. Contrary to what most people say, what they would call common wisdom, and the whole point of common wisdom isn't common, the speed at which mobile devices allow us to do things is not contrary to accuracy. That speed that you say causes you to not want to check is the same speed that would help you look up every spelling, every grammar rule, every capitalization rule in record time. Inaccuracy is not a result of lack of tools or resources. It's a choice, it's a behavior, it's a decision. It's prioritizing speed over accuracy in a medium, resumes, where accuracy is known to be prized and speed is an indicator of lack of preparation. Why would you have to produce a resume quickly? Because you suddenly need one, and suddenly is a bad word in that sentence, and you don't have one, meaning you're not prepared. Don't blame the speed of creation for your error in putting out something inaccuracy. All you're doing is covering up for the lack of preparation. You don't have a career management document from which you can create a resume, which is already perfect to begin with. And you're basically saying, I needed it, and so I have to do it fast. So therefore, fast trumps accurate. I don't know that many people who would say, in my career, fast always trumps accurate, even when the system says accuracy is most important. It's like a spreadsheet that you get quickly, but is riddled with errors. What?
Yeah, that's pointless, yeah. Right?
Guys, if you've been in a situation where you had to prepare a resume quickly and you felt crushed between speed and accuracy, we understand. And we have CAST for that. The Career Management Document CAST, we recommend you keep track of things. Half an hour, once a quarter, not that big a deal to keep your resume up to date. And getting laid off, finances rule, is our guidance about saving 6 months of your money so that if suddenly you need to look for a job, you have to look for a job, you realize I have time, 2, 3, 4 days to get my resume absolutely right.
It's one of those things where preparation, the time you take to prepare makes the rest of it better.
Exactly. So look for spelling errors. If you want to forgive one spelling error, fine. We won't recommend you do that, but we'll understand, and you could hire that candidate. If you're torn on what to do, if you don't believe our guidance here, put the one error resume in your maybe pile. More than one error, though, folks, is a no. Full stop. And I'll tell you something interesting about errors in resumes. This is at least in the States, and I think it's also true in Europe. The one industry in the United States where longer than one page resumes stubbornly remain the standard is academia, universities, college professors, researchers, so on. And by the way, we understand the reasons for it. Often professors and researchers' resumes run to 5, 6, 7, 8 pages. They list all the papers they've written and contributed to and so on. And surely in universities and research departments, accuracy and attention to detail matter.
You'd think so, right?
Yeah. But errors on resumes from academia occur at a much higher ratio per page than corporate or professional resumes. So if I find one error on the average corporate resume, and I do, and I have a 5-page academic resume, there will be 6 or more errors on it. And I find that on a resume, which is supposed to be an accurate document, in a world where accuracy is prized, where correctness is prized, where the devil is in the details. I'm just like, dude, seriously? I mean, it's embarrassing. And I talked to one person once who said, look, I'm sorry, I can't forward this resume on. It's rife with errors. I said, you've got all these failings to, you know, you've got different systems and different fonts and you've got different conventions you're using for whether there's a period or a comma. And the person said, look, I can't be bothered with that. I said, do you say that about your research? And this person said, well, career searching is not the same thing as research. I said, you're the one that contacted me. You're the one that says you lost your job. You didn't get tenure. You're telling me you won't be able to do research unless you get a job. And you're basically willing to be unemployed because you're not willing to put your intellect, your thought process into your resume. Resumes are a bit like the example I use of interviewing or the larger screening process, that you graduate from college and you're a fantastic college football player in the United States. But in order to play football in the National Football League, You have to pass a test, and the test is tennis. I wouldn't have any problem with a football player saying, that's a dumb test. I wouldn't. I agree. It's a dumb test. I think to some degree, resumes and interviewing are less than ideal tests. But your disagreement with the system won't change the system grinding you up and spitting you out.
And to be clear, we might think the resumes and interviews are not useful or less useful than they could be, but we don't know of any better system.
Oh, yeah. And people always try. They try other systems. Oh, let's do video resumes. No offense, guys. The only thing dumber than a video resume is a video resume that you think is good. Because you spend a lot of time on a video resume, nobody's going to watch it. And whatever you think is good will not be as good as what the visual images that most people see on the web today, thanks to high definition and so on. So hopefully we've made our case for accuracy. Spelling, grammar, parallelism and conventions and so on, all of this is a reason for someone to go into the no pile.
Absolutely. And the last one is density.
Yeah, density is something that most younger managers, less experienced managers, don't get. And I would not have said I understood it until I had started looking at hundreds of resumes for jobs and so on, because it defies simple description. It is a combination of factors that cause you to feel that someone's resume is less dense than it needs to be. And what we mean by density is whether or not the preponderance of the candidate's experience is relevant to your role, to your industry, your company, and so on. Look, as a general rule, if you're not an experienced manager, and I'm talking about screening resumes many, many times to decide upon whom to interview, a low density resume in the area of relevance to your industry, to your role, your company is a reason to say no. If you are very experienced, you will have developed the gut level instinct to say, no, you know, I know there are places where there are concerns on this resume, but I've seen enough people to know that this person's experience, while not initially apparently relevant, is in fact highly relevant. And if it's not relevant, I'm willing to find that out in the phone screen or in the face-to-face. But if you're less experienced, we recommend you say no. And here's what happens. You're desperate, which is always bad, or you really need to make a hire. In fact, we've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it 1,000 more in the next 20 years before we get through all of our podcasts, that desperation leads to a motivation to hire. And the first rule in hiring is your job is not to hire. It saves money. It saves time. It saves so much hassle. But managers think they start looking for reasons to like someone. And thanks to confirmation bias, folks, if you start looking for reasons to like somebody, you will find them. Nobody argues with that. And then when we say, if you start looking for reasons to say no to somebody, you'll find them. Well, by definition, then you have to realize if you only have one opening, the only appropriate way to approach all screening processes from initial idea of hiring to the actual hiring and onboarding is to look for reasons to say no, because there's only one opening. And what managers do is they say, ooh, there are similarities here. You know, commerce is commerce. Business is business. Teaching is teaching. Marketing is marketing. Good developers can become good with any language. And those statements are all true, but they're also truisms. And if those of you don't know, a truism is a statement that is true and means nothing. The fact is, knowledge of products, knowledge of industry, knowledge of competitors, knowledge of marketplace, all those things matter. And taking the time to learn them if you don't know them is a significant drag on productivity. And productivity is what we're hiring, folks. It's the underlying principle for organizational life, maximizing productivity by specialization of labor. By this definition, oh, there's relevance there, there's similarities. You ought to start saying, well, in the screening process, every decision is, well, there's some good and some bad, so I'll just sort of get a gut feel of who's most good. If you start doing that, you're going to end up with a pile of yeses. You're going to end up hiring the best person from the earliest resume.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to hire the best person. You're just going to hire the person who feels right. And That depends more on your mood and timing and desperation than anything else. And what that means is the hiring will be easy. The managing will be hard. So when you look for relevance, when you look for density, as we call it on the resume, it also helps you notice nonlinear career choices, which goes to the issue of lack of perseverance within a career path or within an industry. And for those of you who are wondering about perseverance, we have a podcast on downturn rite of passage that addresses one example of a nonlinear career path. It's one of my favorites. Somebody who moves from marketing to sales to customer service, say, in roughly similar roles, and does so perhaps in more than one industry without significant accomplishments, and in stints of 1 to 3 years, is likely to leave your industry, your role, your company, your team in 1 to 3 years. And you have to ask yourself, are you hiring an employee or a contractor? Do you want a person who's invested, who's made a choice already, or not? And you could say, well, I don't really care about whether they're invested in my industry. I don't really care. I just need somebody to do the work. Okay, you're going to be hiring another person in 2 years. And all that institutional memory they leave with, you'd love to have it.
Gone.
Yeah. For somebody who we know is going to leave, how much ought we invest in their career management? How many conversations will we have them? Will we have with them about their future? We could end up doing that virtually every week in one-on-ones. How much of that will be wasted? Now, guys, we're not saying that a linear career path is the only way to success. And this is when I present this, people say, oh, well, you're saying that you have to, a person must have chosen by the time they're 20. And so, you know, there are cases where people move around and they're very successful. Guys, we know that. I completely agree. But the idea that we're looking for nonlinearity as a reason to rule people out doesn't mean that linearity is the only choice. That's a false dilemma. We know there are great candidates with unusual backgrounds that could be an outstanding fit for the role you're hiring for. Candidates with those kinds of backgrounds often make that case, and they sometimes make it pretty well.
That's why if you're trying to move industries or move states or whatever, you have to be more convincing because you're trying to get over this hurdle of saying, I'm doing something unusual.
Yeah. And what people usually do when they have something unusual in their background is they make the case for why unusual is good. Mm-hmm. But in order to do that, when you make the case for why somebody is good, which is what candidates do, they're making the case for reasons to hire someone. But we're not looking for reasons to hire. We're looking for reasons to say no. The appropriate response to somebody who argues they could be an excellent hire, even though their background isn't ideal, or any of the other standards that we've applied through this very long podcast series, the response is, in order to do that, we would have to be looking for reasons to hire people, which would then open us up to myriad reasons for every candidate to be a good hire, because every candidate does have something to offer. And this is just a case of math. If there are 1 million possible candidates for any one role, all of those 1 million have reasons to justify us hiring them. But the only logical way to approach figuring out how to get down from 1 million to 1 is to rule people out and not in. So when the candidate argues for why he should be in, he or she is being completely appropriate and reasonable. And they're talking Spanish and we speak Russian. Mm-hmm. Because that's not what we're trying to do. We're not trying to find a reason to like you. I can find thousands of people to like. I'm trying to find reasons not to like you so that what I end up with is more likely than, not saying it's perfect, more likely to produce better productivity.
Yeah, you have to keep remembering that you're on your side. You're on the side of, in 3 months, and I imagine this person in this role is, what weakness have I overlooked that's going to really annoy me?
Yeah, if you're on the candidate's side, because the candidate's already on the candidate's side, you're going to hire somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And they're not going to be the best. Right. And now we come to how to decide whom to screen further, which is really more logistical, right? But it's pretty easy. Using all the criteria we've talked about in this cast and looking for reasons to say no, which is the sine qua non of hiring, you create three piles. No, maybe, and yes. By the way, you'll notice I didn't say yes, maybe, and no. I said no, maybe, and yes. Now look, guys, when you're looking at a resume, it's completely okay to put a candidate in the maybe pile if you have a question about them, but their divergence from your ideal isn't significant. Now, look, I admit, guys, I'm telling you how to learn this process. I also admit that in my general experience now, having screened resumes for 27, 25, 26 years, I admit I only have two piles, no and maybe. Now, you know, that's because I looked at 50,000 or more resumes.
I would say the same. I only have no and maybe.
No, maybe. I don't want to say yes if I'm worried that the yes means to me they're a yes for a hire. The maybe means they're a maybe for a hire if they get through the next two steps, the phone screen and the face-to-face interviewing day.
Agreed.
Yeah. So you've got the three piles. You're starting to look at resumes. Try to apply the same criteria and your feeling about those criteria for each candidate through your entire pile of candidates. If you're being forgiving on, say, industry with one candidate, try to remember to do that with others. The reason why is because this process, whether we like to admit it or not, is completely subjective, far more likely to be affected by mood, desperation, and level of energy than most of us would care to admit. That's my experience, having gone through piles of resumes. Now, by the way, level of energy, if you don't know, if you're tired, much more likely to mean no when you're screening. Because if you're tired, you don't want to commit yourself to another half-hour phone screen that's likely to become a no. And so you say, yeah, okay, no. And I'm not against the no decision. I'm against the no decision for the wrong reason, just because you're tired. So as you go through it, recognize that you're making value judgments and subjective choices, and just try to have a good mindset as you go through it. And I don't mean a yes mindset. I mean a good mindset. And then the other thing too. Yeah. I was talking to our friend Dan West at Apple on the phone this week, and we were talking about hiring generally, and I said, you realize that there was a golden age of recruiting when managers really knew how to recruit, and we've lost that for good reasons and bad. HR became very involved in the hiring process. Please, HR, don't get mad at me for saying this. HR does a lot of really important things in screening and recruiting, and I love you guys. But too many managers now, and inexperienced managers, those of you who are just starting, mistakenly believe that you only are supposed to consider resumes that HR sends you. But that's not so. I mean, get your hands on every resume you can find. Start with as many resumes as you can get. Don't let HR take your possible pile of candidates from 500 to 100 until you know and trust your HR partner, because they know you. Don't miss that going from 500 to 100 and HR only giving you 100 is you trying to be efficient. But hiring is the most important decision that managers make. And on most important decisions, the only standard ought to be effective. So the fact that you have to screen another 400 ought not to matter if the one you want is in the 400. And there's nobody who will ever know your job, your role, your needs better than you.
Yeah, you're talking about an extra maybe half a day in an investment that's 5 years of person on your team.
Yeah. And I'll just tell you, when people say, oh, I don't want to show you that many resumes, why not? I got to live with this guy. I want all of them. Give me all of them. You want 500? I want 500. And by the way, when I'm done, I'm going to share with you why people were yeses and nos. Look, the more screening somebody else does who's not deeply engaged in your role that you're hiring for, the more danger is that they've said yes to the wrong candidates. And that means both there are yeses in there that should have been nos, so that's wasting your time, and there are nos that you didn't see that might could have been yeses. Okay, so once you've gone through the whole pool of candidates, you're going to have three piles. Throw away the no pile. Unless there's some value in terms of training HR and your directs on how you screen and why. Set aside the maybe pile and phone screen the yes pile. Now look, if you have too many yeses to screen them all, first of all, do a happy dance. Come on.
Yay.
Okay. Or it might be time to shamefully recalibrate more tightly your screening process. If you have 100 resumes and you have 80 yeses, and there wasn't a great deal of screening done by somebody who knows your role backwards and forwards, you're doing it wrong. Go back through and start making more no's. And then, if you still got too many, and you really feel you've done a full screen based on looking for reasons to say no, and the, applying the criteria we've shared with you here, then rank order the yes candidates and phone interview them based on their rank. And the idea behind that is you're still not done because you still got to do phone screening, and you also have to do face-to-face interviewing. And resume screening and phone screening together are the most efficient tools to get near to your one hired candidate. And face-to-face interviewing, as the last step, is the most effective tool to choose precisely that one.
And you always start with the best ones, because you might have, you might say, I want to interview the top five, and then you don't even phone screen 6 to 10.
Yeah.
Because there's only a certain number that you want to interview.
And yet, at the same time, if in fact you have five that you phone screen, and let's say you say yes to all five, good for you. You've got five final interview days sets. Remember, on the five you interview face-to-face, you don't rank order them and then choose the highest ranking one. You make sure first that you only rank order the ones that you say yes to, and the ones you've said yes to, when you rank order them, they're also ones that you agree can do the job. So you end up hiring number one of the people that have met the standard, rather than simply rank ordering whomever you interviewed. Well, I just had a client recently. They asked me to interview a person for an executive job, and two or three people didn't know our process. And so I interviewed the person and said, no, I don't recommend you hire him. And they said, well, aren't we going to talk about it? I said, I'm happy to talk about it. I am right now. Don't hire him. And they thought that we should talk, and they completely didn't know about the interview results capture meeting. Okay, so let's summarize one of the longest series of podcasts ever. Folks, over time, you're going to become really good at screening for the roles that you're hiring for. This series of casts gives you a basic framework, and we want you to layer on top of it your particular situation. Think about it this way. For something you'll do perhaps 5,000 times in your career, something that's important to your career and to your organization that you do a lot, it's important you be very, very good at it. Hopefully this cast helped. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
That's it about how to scan resumes. Hope it was helpful to you folks. Come back next week. Always good guidance, actionable, specific, for Manager Tools.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want. With easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions, it couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.